Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation to join you. I'm pleased to be able to kick off the first part, I guess, of this segment. Very interesting discussions this morning. Lots of great opportunity. Very encouraging to hear that we're kind of seeding the profession again with an undergraduate focus. What I hope to do with this presentation is really take the curtain back a little bit in the private sector. And I'll start off by saying I think that, frankly, we're biased against, right? Because in many ways, the faculty have grown up in an academic setting or a setting that they've only ever worked in. So when it comes time to mentor students, whether they're undergraduates or graduates, they can only really mentor them and guide them toward things they know well. And that's, of course, academia, which is fine, totally understandable. But it's important that we build into some things an opportunity to get a chance to see how other parts of the industry work. So let me see. Left button. Okay, so the takeaway themes, I'll start with those. First of all, the private sector offers a real diversity of opportunities and a dedication to scientific progression and career management. I'll speak a little bit about that. The private sector is a very mission-oriented work environment. We have direct projects we work on. We have deadlines. When the project goes, we move on to other projects. We have development of an effective project management system, as I've indicated, and we value very greatly project management skills and all the effectiveness skills that go with that, not just the scientific skills. And we do require the technical know-how, but the teamwork, creativity, and leadership are key parts of that. And there really is no substitute for experience in the curriculum. I heard a couple of speakers talk about internships and things like that, and I'll say a few words about that because they really are critical to having a common understanding and appreciation for what's included. Oops, wrong way. So a little bit about, well, this will be about a little bit about Dagger Sciences, but I think it's pretty similar in a lot of the large major organizations. The typical entry points for a specialist in entomology, really any agricultural scientific discipline, would be in a discovery research mode, and we hire individuals in the BS, MS, or PhD level. Field science or field agronomy, again, BS, MS, or PhD, or field sales, and typically that's BS or MS. And again, what we're really looking for is a whole range of skills. In all honesty, in the R&D function, at least in my function, I tend to focus more on the PhD level and the master's level. But what I have determined is that the best students at that level have had a very broad and diverse educational experience starting with the undergraduate degree. Career development in the private sector, in at least the big companies, is really a very big deal. Which means we put a lot of focus and opportunity into a wide range of roles over the career. Folks in Dagger Sciences, as the other companies, work in many areas. I worked, my first job was with field research in Minnesota. I was in that job 2 years, and then I was in human resources for 3 years, something I had absolutely no preparation for. But that experience was a very enlightening experience, and I've moved into other roles, as have many folks I see in the audience here who have been in many other different roles. We do have a scientific ladder, just as academia does and government, and it's we have the opportunity to grow on the scientific ladder as well as to move into the management ladder. But those are parallel ladders. They're not stacked ladders, per se. Careers are managed, if you will, by employee review committees. That's a very important part of our culture. That identify development plans versus individual interests and skills. And the goal of this management is to understand how to keep the individual energized and passionate throughout their career. We don't grant tenure, and so individuals need to be able to have some level of self-motivation and determination, but we partner in that in identifying the kinds of projects, the kind of interests, the kind of career choices that will allow them to be passionate about their career. What does that scientific ladder look like in certain terms? And you can use numbers, you can use letters, you can use different things, but this just gives you a sense of a comparison. Our salary levels go from 10 to 28 in that context. Entry level, for example, for a bachelor's degree would be at what we call salary level 17. The expectation is that if someone comes in at salary level 17, over the course of their career, they will have, on average, 4 significant promotions, and they would conclude around salary level 21. And behind all of this would be all of the salary surveys that go with those levels and the rest of it. So we know we're on par with the industry and competitive industries. With a bachelor's degree, you come in a level higher, but fundamentally the same career level is what the industry would say that you reach. With a PhD, entry level is at salary level 20, and again, 4 significant promotions, and the expectation is that you would average out at 24. Now, many others go very, in each of these degrees, go much higher than this. The one thing I will say that's, I think, somewhat consistent in agricultural companies versus, say, pharmaceutical companies, is that once you come in with a particular degree, the rest of it from there is on you. There's no special treatment for PhDs. There's no special, in our company at Waste, it's not our culture to call people doctor this or doctor that. You're in the company, and then from there you're working toward the expectations of your salary level. And we find that does create a very, I think, a good collegial environment. The potential exists to achieve much more than these levels. And for example, some our most influential scientists in our company are advisors and senior advisors. We have one fellow, which is salary level 27 in our entire organization, and those levels are very rare and have very high standards and expectations. Manager positions exist between the salary level 22 and salary level 28. So again, it's a parallel type of path. You can, if you're passionate about your science and being a scientist, you can continue to grow as a scientist. And we don't force people who don't have managerial skills to go into management, and we don't, and vice versa. So it's an opportunity to, in many ways, pursue your path. Now, a book I read many years ago that stays with me is one by Robert Kelly called The Gold Collar Worker. It's getting a bit dated now, but I think the principles are still fundamentally the same. He broke out the work environment as, you know, blue collar, white collar, which we hear all the time on TV, but he also referred to as gold collar. And the way that he would distinguish him would be activity-based contribution with fairly little empowerment to design or decide. And so that would be typically what we would expect with salary levels of below salary level 17, although individuals who have that certainly can grow past that point. The white collar, broad responsibility and know-how, good education, but the scope of the contribution is somewhat predetermined in terms of working within project scope and the rest of it. But what we're really after long term to be successful and competitive are the knowledge workers who are mission-oriented, responsibility with complete or very significant influence on projects. People who start things, people who lead them to a completion, is a rare commodity, and those are the kind of skills that really have to be started earlier and earlier in a career. They just don't drop out of the sky. Another thing to be very cognizant of, as we have become very cognizant of, is how the workforce has changed and become somewhat clustered in their own ideals and values. Many of you in the room here are baby boomers, as I am, and so we have grown up with a set of values and appreciation. The Gen Xers, 65 to 80, have a different set, and the ones that we're hiring now and the ones that you'll be recruiting into your undergraduate programs are the Gen Ys, who were born from 81 to 2000. So what does that mean? Well, for these folks, they've had a whole different set of life-defining events than we have, and that's why, frankly, sometimes we have a hard time relating to them. Try to explain some of the shows that we used to watch, you know, and see what kind of response you get to that. Their attitudes and values are different than what we expect. And those of us who have children in this age know exactly what we're talking about. There's a certain confidence. Diversity, frankly, is not an issue. We don't have to convince people to appreciate diversity and differences as much as you would think based on, you know, previous generations. Optimism is just built in. In many times, I don't see as much pessimism, sarcasm a lot, but not optimism. Dedication and civic duty is part of their DNA in many ways, and I think we see that. I think we saw a lot of that play out very well in the recent election. Characteristics and skills—they're very techno savvy. It's unbelievable how technical savvy they are. It's scary, actually. Collective action—they have somewhat of a pack mentality, Facebook and all those kind of things. Quite innovative because they learn and they teach on their own, they're not intimidated by new computer gizmos and text messaging, accepting of differences, and they're very self-reliant. That's a different kind of mentality, something we have to appreciate and understand when we recruit and how we recruit, I think it would serve anyone who's trying to work with them. Our goal, of course, is to find Their goal is to find work and create a life that has meaning. That fundamentally sums up the theme, if you will, for individuals in this particular generation. And in that context, I think agricultural science and agricultural research can play very well, particularly when you associate it with, which you clearly can, with health and with agricultural value. If you look across the different aspects here of the different generations, work ethics and values, you know, the questions are what's next, tremendous ability to multitask, tenacity, there is an entrepreneurial sense, communications for Jim White, email, voicemail, text messaging. When my daughter was 19, I got a bill one time and she had, in 1 month, had 4,300 text messages. I couldn't believe it. Fortunately, I had the plan where it was unlimited, or I would have really had no trouble. I was sharing that story with Rick the other night. Feedback and rewards, whenever I want it, feedback at the push of a button, not a lot of patience and a lot of things. So these are things that frankly can't always understand, but I'm sure if you've, worked around folks at this age group, you understand it, and it's not at all trying to position this as a bad thing. It's all good, it's just, it is what it is, and we need to understand it. So let's talk a little bit about the private sector world and expectations. Our mission is clear. It's to discover and develop crop production and protection technology. We live on technology advances. We believe firmly that technology has a big, important, and positive impact on the world's problems. And we are clearly accountable for business development based on technology. Because agriculture is a business dependent on scale for profitability, new technology can have a great impact on agricultural success. Where you see in developing countries, for example, where you see the real promise is where you can actually leverage technology on a large basis. And then when you come full circle, you have places that are quite affluent, some places in Europe and so forth, that want to go the other way and put take technology out of the picture and make it on a more small scale and natural basis. Perfectly fine if they can afford it, but at the end of the day, technology has a place for scale. Is there a track record for technology and a place to be able to demonstrate where you can have an impact? Well, I think the data and the numbers speak for themselves over time. From the 1930s, when there was intense focus on mechanization, to the hybridization of seeds, to the application of nitrogen fertilizer, to pest control through chemical means, through biotechnology. I mean, it's pretty clear which direction productivity has gone, and it's also equally clear that technology has been the driver behind that, and that it's the private sector who's developed and in most instances discovered that technology. So we do have a story for undergraduates and graduates in terms of their ability to have an impact, not just on yield, but on the impact that this yield has on society. What are some of the fundamental tenets of private sector, however, and they're not for everybody, is that we believe, and we think that we're backed up on this over time, that there will always be some form of pestilence and a need for production efficiency, and there'll be always a shortage of food, fiber, and timber. You know, depending on which numbers you look at in terms of able to sustain the world's population and the rest of it, it all points in the same direction. We also believe firmly there'll always be a better solution than there is today. And if you go back, you know, 50 years or even just 20 years and think about how pest control and agriculture or urban settings was versus how it is today, no one can argue there hasn't been tremendous progress made. And that, I think, is a partnership between the public and the private sector. But from today, there will always be. One of the questions I always ask folks when I interview them is, what is entomology, weed science, plant pathology, depending on who I'm talking with, what does it look like 100 years from now? They won't have to worry about what it looks like 100 years now, but what I'm trying to get to is their sense of imagination. And if they're giving me examples of things that we've already been doing for 5 years or 10 years, it doesn't give me a real good sense that they're imaginative and thinking about the possibilities. And of course, our whole premise is built on if we find that better solution, that someone will be willing to pay for it, and that'll be, of course, a good business proposition. But right now, the reason that the title of this is the future is finally here, there has never really been, in my career or time, been a better time to be in agriculture or the private sector. We are hiring tremendously right now because of the boom in technology. We hired in my Endow AgriSciences just R&D last year over 170 people. This next year we're going to hire over 350, and we're not the biggest of the companies, but I think it's an indication of the investments that the companies are willing to make in terms of developing new solutions. Now, as we talk a little bit about the kind of training and expectation that we're looking for along these lines, It really needs to expose students to business discipline and rationale to distinguish product concepts from technology platforms. Science is not the same as technology, and technology is not the same as products. So it's that journey that we have to be able to make. And we had a vice president one time that was fond of saying a technical success with a commercial failure is still a failure. And that still rings true today. Now, where does that happen, and how do we sort out true opportunity from just an adventure? First of all, the universities do a great job of identifying the enabling sciences and teaching students on what those are. And so if we're talking in the world of chemical solutions, you know, the sciences that we would bring to bear to that would be chemistry, for example, biochemistry and entomology. And they have to work very well as a team in order to identify some technology platforms. And in our company, one of those technology platforms is a product group we call the spinosyns. But those platforms then have to be developed into products. And I'll talk a bit about that in the context of project management. But we have two major products within that platform, spinosad and spinetoram. But what really turns that into value is to take those products and put them in the context of product concepts that we can actually go out and position against problems and solutions. And just to put things into context, we have probably in Dow AgroSciences, we have about 30 active ingredients in our portfolio. Some are brand new, some are still in the patent, and several others are off patent. But out of those 30 active ingredients, we have over 600 products that we actually manufacture, produce, and sell in the marketplace. And so the ability to take a limited set of active ingredients and turn those into products that add specific value is part of our journey. Each commercial product is a result of hundreds to thousands of individual projects. That's why I say project management's a big deal. We're a very heavily regulated industry. More so than the pharmaceutical industry, because we have to worry about environmental fate, food residues, and things far beyond just mammalian toxicology. Each project has a timeline with a critical path, milestones, resource budgets, etc. And words were never truer than time is money. And time to market, time to manufacturing are very critical. Project management, as I've said a couple times now, is a very big deal for us in the private sector. The way we organize it is probably in some ways not a lot different than other companies. We have a product development process we call Create Product Success, or CPS. And you can see here it's really fundamentally based on teamwork. There's a project success leader, or affectionately known as a PSL, and then we have a regulatory team, a biology team, and a supply team. And of course, entomologists would make up for a case of an insect management product or an insect trait would represent participants and leadership on the biology team. But we also have in each of our local commercial units what we call tiger teams, and those tiger teams work with the customers. They know the current situation. They're more of the on-the-ground practitioners, and that's frankly, we have a lot of folks in those roles who are in the BS degree category. But this team working very effectively over a number of years, because it takes from 6 to 9 years to actually register a product, is critical. So what we're looking for in order to accomplish that with folks, whether it starts with a BS and goes into the higher degrees, is for technology discovery and development, is the ability to also come to us with a very good knowledge of the scientific method and the technical know-how, the good entomology, all the things that make a good rounded entomologist. But we also need you to start the journey for us in terms of developing their creativity, their teamwork, their leadership, their problem solving, their decision making, productivity, communication, all those things which ultimately we are recruiting on and trying to identify the best of the best that can do all of those things. Some of the things that we look at from a non-technical skill standpoint become the basis for their ultimate effectiveness. And the non-technical skills, though rarely do we see programs that actually make an effort to teach that directly, and occasionally you'll see an effort where they try to incorporate it, but it's something we would really challenge you to find ways to do it. Teamwork, you know, demonstrated importance of multidisciplinary research. Creativity, principles and knowledge from one discipline course, for example, to problems of another through special projects and problems, ways to develop that kinds of lateral thinking. Leadership, obvious leadership within the department and active student programs. These are the kind of things that can get people part of a community and going. Active participation in ESA meetings. And I've seen, when I was president last year, I had the great opportunity to go to all the branch meetings, and I was completely encouraged and by the great participation that students had in many, if not most of them. You know, I put down some thoughts here in terms of what you might pursue at a BS curriculum. I would suggest that you start talking early on with students. The first 2 years, the fundamentals from that, there should be a real effort to try to get some sort of academic internship if you think that they're pursuing the graduate student route. Or if they're looking for a job right out of school, try to find a private sector internship. There's lots of companies in every area that are going to have salespeople, R&D people, and so forth that would probably be more than willing to work with you to set that up. In year three, assign some sort of mentor to that. Encourage them to participate in ESA branch meetings and put a strong emphasis on experimental design and project management through special problems. And then as you move into the final summer, again, a different academic internship, a different private sector internship, so they have different ways to understand the options. And then in year four, assign a new different kind of mentor and really diversify from entomology, because as I indicated, it's a starting point, but it's not an ending point. So those are some thoughts kind of around the world in terms of what the private sector does, what we're trying to accomplish, and the kinds of skills that we're ultimately going to be looking for that will begin with a strong undergraduate program.